Good morning. Nice to see you all with us here this morning. Now, Dawn was right. The singing is really good today. You guys sound great. Ladies, I thought you were great. Anyway, regardless of what Dawn said, I thought the ladies sounded really good. Glad you chose to worship with us here today at Timber Lane. If you're a guest of ours, we want you to know you are our honored guests this morning. We're so glad that you chose to be with us as we worship God together. I say it every week. I hope you see Jesus today. I hope that you're encouraged by being here. I hope that something happens that caused you to be more in love with Jesus when you walk out of the building than you were when you walked into the building. And I mean that every week as well. And I mean it today, too. Back in the 1960s, NASA was preparing to send Americans to the moon for the very first time. And they took the astronaut trainees out into the desert of Arizona, had them working and training in some conditions that would be pretty close to what they might find on the moon, you know, rocks and that kind of topography. And they wanted them to be able to walk and work in their spacesuits. So they're out in their spacesuits in the desert, and an elderly Native American Indian comes along with his grandson and sees what's going on. The older gentleman doesn't speak much English. But he asks his grandson, find out what these men are doing and who exactly they are. The astronauts tell the boy, we are representing the government of the United States of America. We're preparing for a very important mission. We're going to the moon. Little boy told his grandfather that. His grandfather immediately took out a pen and paper, wrote a quick note, gave it to the grandson with some instructions. The grandson handed it to the astronauts and said, my grandfather really wants you to take this message to the moon with you. They looked at the message, but it wasn't written in English. So they asked the boy, what does it mean? The little boy said, well, I'm not going to translate it for you, but it is an important message. It needs to go to the moon. The astronauts went into town that night, and they found some other Native Americans and said, this older gentleman gave us this message to take to the moon, but we don't know what it means. Can you translate it for us? Some other people looked at the message and kind of smiled and said, yeah, I'm not going to translate it, but he's right. It is a very important message. You need to take it to the moon with you. Now their curiosity is really piqued. So they go back to Washington. They get in touch with somebody from the State Department and say, we need an expert in Indian affairs. An expert shows up and says, you know, this older gentleman gave us this message to take to the moon, but no one can tell us what the message is. Can you translate it for us? The expert looks at the message and says, yeah, I can tell you what it says. Well, it says, don't trust these guys. They're here to take your land. This morning, I want to talk to you about trust. And we've been going through this kind of short sermon series that I've called Opening Arguments, for lack of a better title. As we talk about the theme of 2010 for Timber Lane, being Jesus' witnesses, we're to be his witnesses. There's some things that we're just going to have to get right. There's some things that we're going to have to figure out if we're really going to be the kind of witnesses that Jesus expects us to be and the kind of witness that Jesus is calling us to be. We talked about focus. We've talked about commitment. And this morning I want to talk to you a little bit about trust. And really the lame joke that I just told is a pretty good introduction to my lesson this morning, because I want to talk about trust in the context of the life of a man who was told to go take his people someplace that they've never been before, and when you get there, take over the land. Now, last week we talked a little bit about saying yes to God. And I mentioned last week that it's much easier to say no to the things around us if there's already a deep burning yes within us. We talked about some reasons to say yes to God. This morning I want to talk to you about a man who actually tried really hard to say no to God. In fact, he was a man who came up with different and unique ways to say no to God. But he pretty quickly found out God's a hard person to say no to. I want to talk to you a little bit about Moses this morning. Well, if you're going to talk about trust, really, who better to talk about than Moses? Moses is a first ballot Hall of Fame Bible guy. Only one person in all of Scripture bears the name Moses. With the exception of Jesus, no one has more written about them in Scripture, as does Moses. His name is synonymous with trust. And yet, Moses is a man who, before he says yes to God, strings along a whole list of no's that he's going to try out on God. Until, that is, God makes him an offer that he really couldn't refuse. Open up your Bibles to Exodus, the third chapter. This morning I want to take a look at the section of Moses' story where God calls him to be the one to lead his people out of Egyptian bondage. You know, it's a fascinating story in and of itself. Even more interesting, I think, when you look at it in the context of the fact that God is still looking for someone to say yes. Take a look at Moses' story and we get some great insight into human nature. Get some great insight into the nature of God. I think also some reasons to say yes to God. You know, you are very familiar with the story of Jesus. Yeah, that one too. You're very familiar with the story of Moses. We've known his story just about all our lives. The very beginning of Moses' story is very interesting. Moses and I actually have something in common. We were both beautiful babies. At least that's what Scripture says. Actually, it says it about Moses. It doesn't say that about me. But my mother says that about me. Moses was born in a time, however, where Pharaoh was conducting his own Planned Parenthood. Pharaoh decreed everyone that was born at Moses' time, male children, Hebrew children, be put to death. Moses' mother goes way out of her way to make sure that doesn't happen to her little boy. She hides him for as long as she can until he gets too old and a little bit too loud. So then we know that she put him in a basket and placed him in the Nile where she knew he would be found. He was found by a princess, and his early history is grew up in royalty. It's a beautiful story. We know the end of Moses' story pretty well. Moses is the deliverer. It was Moses who God chose to be the one to stand before Pharaoh and demand that Pharaoh let his people out of Egypt. Moses is the one that God used to rain down 10 plagues. It was Moses who lifted his staff and watched the Red Sea part. Moses was the one who walked up on the mountain and spent some time with God, walked down the top 10 list of what God expected of his people. The end of Moses' story is powerful. But between that beautiful beginning and that powerful end, we get a glimpse of a man who really was pretty normal. We get a glimpse of a man between the beautiful beginning and the powerful end that in a lot of ways was a lot like us. A man who said, you know, why can't I just stay hidden here in my own little corner of the world? Why doesn't everyone just leave me alone? I'm not bothering anyone, and I'd appreciate it if no one bothered me as well. Just let me do my thing, and I'll be happy. He was a man who had some issues in saying yes to God. But God's children were slaves in Egypt land, so God took Moses by the hand, said, Moses, tell old Pharaoh to set him free. But Moses wanted a way to get out, because in his mind, he's beginning to doubt and said, Lord, old Pharaoh, he ain't going to listen to me. That's from the SBV, by the way, Statler Brother version. Moses is going to try five different times to tell God no. Moses is going to try five different ways to try to talk himself out of saying yes to God. And it should come really as no surprise that we try the exact same thing. We use the exact same excuses as Moses used. Thousands of years have come and gone, and really, human nature hasn't changed very much. Exodus 3 opens. God is speaking directly to Moses in a miraculous fashion from a burning bush. He's instructing Moses to go to Pharaoh, demand the release of his people. And Moses' first excuse is, I could never do that. Oh, I could never do that. Moses' initial reaction is, me? You talking to me? I couldn't do that. Verse 9 of Exodus 3. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, God speaking. And I've seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, "Who am I? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And God said, "I'll be with you." Who am I? Moses said, "God, you sure you got the right person?" Now, there was a time, maybe 40 years ago, I could have pulled this off. Maybe I was in a different circumstance a long time ago, but this is way over my head. You're asking something that's way out of my league. This is way above my pay scale. You know, if you haven't noticed, I've just been a goat herder here for the last four decades. I could never do something like this. And these feelings of inadequacy and insecurity come shining through in the life of Moses. And we say the same thing, don't we? "Oh, I could never do that. No, I couldn't do that. I could never ask a friend that I work with if I could pray with him about something. I couldn't do that. I could never teach a class at church. I could never pray with my wife. No, I just couldn't do that." But here's the lesson. Honestly, by yourself, you probably can't. But God made a promise to Moses. When you say, "I could never do that," God says, "I'll be with you." You don't have to do it alone. God makes it very clear in verse 12. "I'm not going to leave you hanging out to dry, Moses. You're not going to be on your own. I'm going to be with you every step of the way." Moses is told right off the bat, don't trust in yourself. Trust in me. Put your trust in me. But Moses isn't quite so quick to say yes and to agree to that just yet. So he has another excuse. They're going to ask hard questions. Moses tells God, "They're going to ask hard questions, and I don't think I'm going to be able to answer them." And maybe of all the excuses that Moses tries out, on some level, this one might carry the most weight. At least, I think maybe it does with us. Moses says, "I don't know enough." Basically, that's what he's saying, right? They're going to ask questions that I can't answer. I don't know enough. Have you ever tried that excuse on God? "Well, I don't know enough." That's really a cop-out, I got to tell you. Because aren't we supposed to be growing in truth and in knowledge? Don't you know more this year than you did last year? Don't you know more about Jesus now than you did 5 years ago? Certainly you know more about Jesus now than when you first heard his story. Verse 13 of Exodus 3, Moses said to God, "Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you.' And they ask me, 'What's his name?' Then what shall I tell them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you're to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you." God also said to Moses, "Say to the Israelites, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you.'" Moses says, they're going to ask me questions that I can't answer. But God makes it very clear to Moses, the time has come for these people to understand just how desperately I want a relationship with them. The time has really come for these people to understand that I'm not some distant being somewhere that plays favorites. I desperately want each one of them as individuals and as a people to be my people. But Moses is still looking for a loophole. See, I don't think I can convince them. I don't think I'll come up with the right answers when they ask me a question. Sound familiar? Instead of boldly sharing the story of Jesus, we convince ourselves they're going to ask me something I can't answer. And instead of being a participant in the whole process, we just remain a spectator. We allow all of those unasked questions to paralyze us with fear. And so we don't open our mouths. And we don't say or do a thing. Because all we can think about is what if? Whew, what if? What if they ask me about predestination? What if they ask me about Calvinism? What if they ask me to quote the book of Revelation backwards in Greek? What if? They're going to ask me things I don't know. Here's what I've found. Those kind of questions, they just don't come up. Not from people who are searching. I have never initiated a conversation with someone about Jesus, a non-Christian, and their first question was, okay, how's the book of Mark really end? Who is the Antichrist? What is the unpardonable sin? They don't care. But here's some questions they do ask. My wife and I are really struggling. The Bible say anything about a happier marriage? You know, we're having trouble with some family issues, our children, and just our family is struggling. Any suggestions? I feel lonely. I desperately feel like I'm missing something in life. I'm looking for a place to fit in. Might the Bible have an answer for me? And let me tell you, by the way, those are hard questions too. But the people who are asking those questions aren't looking for some know-it-all. They're not looking for someone who can answer some deep theological conundrum. They really don't care about that. What they do care about is someone who can show them authentic Christianity. What they really do care about is someone who can mirror God's love to them, who can walk along beside them, put our arms around them. You know the old saying, no one cares how much you know till they know how much you care. It's true. People are looking for someone to love and to be loved by. And if they ask you a question that you don't know, say what I say. I don't know, but I'll find out. Exodus chapter 3, Moses wasn't really as interested in finding out the answer as he was in trying to weasel his way out of the responsibility that God's placed before him. When it says they're going to ask me hard questions, God says, I can answer their questions because I am. I am the answer to the questions. But Moses, he's not going to give up that easy. He comes up with another excuse. I can't make a difference. Me, just little old me, I can't make a difference. It's his attitude. Look at the next chapter, chapter 4. Moses answered, what if they don't believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? Then the Lord said to him, what's that in your hand? A staff, he replied. The Lord said, throw it on the ground. Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, reach out your hand and take it by the tail. So Moses reached out, took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. This, said the Lord, is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. God gives Moses this miraculous sign to validate the fact that God is with me. In fact, God goes further than that. He says, put your hand in your cloak. He pulls it out, and it's leprous. Put it back in. He pulls it back out, and it's white as snow. If they don't believe that, take some water out of the Nile River, pour it on the ground, it'll turn to blood. God goes out of his way to make sure that people are going to understand that God is behind Moses, that God is with Moses. He gives him three miraculous signs to prove it. And Moses still has the problem. Well, really, what can I do? What can just one person do? Sound familiar? Now, how many things have you not gotten involved in because you've just convinced yourself, well, it's just me. It's just us, just a little congregation in Tallahassee. Really, what can we do? But I'll challenge you to think of one ministry that this congregation's involved in that didn't begin with one person or a couple people thinking out loud, what if we were to do this? What if we were to rethink our whole education program? What if we were to, just us, support some missionaries someplace like, oh, I don't know, South America? What if we were just to get some retired women together and make some stuffed bears to hand out to the kids at the hospital. Maybe just 10 or 12. Now, who would have thought that would have turned into, man, I don't know the number. 20,000? I don't know. 100? I don't know. It's a huge number. It's just us. It's just me. We can't make a difference. You know, at this point in Moses' story, he's beginning to realize God really is hard to say no to. Because God just keeps on talking. He keeps on knocking. He keeps on telling Moses exactly what it is he wants him to do. And the truth is, he's really not taking no for an answer. You know, I'd hate to get to heaven one day and have God tell me, Tim, I had this great thing in mind for you to do. I had this really significant task that I wanted you to accomplish, but you told me no. And I say, well, wait a minute, God, no. I don't remember you ever asking me that. I wouldn't have said no to that. I wouldn't have said no to something that significant and something that big. And God kind of gently tell me, well, technically, you were just two yeses from it. But when you said no to reaching out to that person that just needed someone to talk to, when you said no to helping that family that was, you know, needed some help, when you said no to reaching in and finding a little bit more money just to share with somebody, I knew you'd never say yes to this big thing that I had in mind. You know, we kind of get in our minds that it's the big thing. It's the next big event that we really look forward to. But every big thing begins with a little thing. In fact, I'm convinced that the little things are the big things. The greatest difference we'll ever make is just one life at a time, one heart at a time, sharing Jesus' love, one person at a time. When we say, I can't make a difference, God says, I am the difference. I'm sure a lot of you will remember the original Rocky movie, you know, before they made 25, back in the 70s, before anybody even knew who Sylvester Stallone was. This movie comes out. One of the characters in that movie was a man named Polly. He would become Rocky's brother-in-law. He was kind of an insensitive goon who worked in a meatpacking house. His greatest ambition in life was to be a debt collector for a loan shark. In one particular scene, he's talking about the relationship that Rocky and his sister Adrian have. And he says, Rock, I don't see it. What's the attraction? I just don't see what you see in her. Why do you like being with her? And Rocky says, I don't know. It's gaps, I guess. He says, gaps? What are you talking about, gaps?
Well, you know, it's gaps. I got gaps. She got gaps. Together, we got gaps. And when we come together, we fill in each other's gaps.
It's my Rocky Balboa impression. You know, a lot of people have that idea of their relationship with God. God just kind of fills in the gaps. God gives me just that little boost that I need to accomplish something. God takes my efforts and he augments it and he supplements my efforts and it makes it enough. But I'm not sure that's really good theology. Remember when Jesus is talking to his closest friends in John chapter 15? And he says, I'm the vine, you're the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do a little bit. Apart from me, you can do some things. Apart from me, you can make a dent. We know that verse. We know that's not what Jesus said. Jesus said, apart from me, you can do absolutely, positively nothing. And he was talking to Peter and James and John, by the way. He was talking to some pretty motivated, pretty dedicated people. Jesus said, apart from me, you're not going to be able to do anything. Let me give you a little bit of important information. We got gaps. God doesn't have gaps. This idea, we do our thing, God does his thing, we meet in the middle, it's a beautiful thing. What we accomplish is completely Because of the power and the sovereignty of God. It's all about God. It's not about us. And actually, that takes a tremendous amount of pressure off me when I realize and appreciate that point. But Moses still can't bring himself to say yes to God. He has another excuse. That's just not me. That's not my thing. That's not my, if I can use a buzzword we use, that's not my gift. I'm not gifted that way. Verse 10 of Exodus 4. Moses pleaded with the Lord, "Oh Lord, I'm just not a good speaker. I never have been. And I'm not now, even after you've spoken to me. I'm clumsy with words." Moses tells God, some people have a way with words. Other people, like me, not have ways. I can't speak. I'm not a good public speaker. I didn't know that this whole thing was going to involve public speaking. You know what the number two fear of Americans is? Death, which makes sense to me. You know what the number one fear for most Americans? Public speaking. Which leads to the old Seinfeld gag, at funerals, most people would rather be the one in the coffin than the one giving the eulogy. Moses was scared to death of speaking. He said, wait a minute, that's not my thing. That's not my gift. I wasn't wired that way. And God's response to Moses is classic. God told Moses, I know exactly how you're wired. I know exactly how you're made. I made you. We tell God, I'm not wired that way. That's not my gift. Now, other people, now they're really good at that, but not me. So we choose to do nothing. And we're really pretty good at rationalizing that. And we play that card pretty often. No, thanks for asking, but that's just not me. It's not my gift. God tells us, I'm the one who wired you. I know exactly what you're capable of, and I wouldn't ask you to do something that I didn't think and know that you could already accomplish. You know, could God maybe be forcing you today to get outside your comfort zone and do some things that you've always said, that's just not my thing. That's just not my gift. He was with Moses. Well, Moses is pretty well out of excuses. So he finally resorts to just being honest with God. Moses finally tells God, but I just don't want to. Okay, there, I said it. I just don't want to. I just don't want to do it. Verse 13, Moses said to God, Oh Lord, please send someone else to do it. And by this time, God's pretty much had it with Moses' excuses. Verse 14, then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, What about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak well. He's already on his way to meet you, and his heart will be glad when he sees you. You should speak to him, you shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I'll help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. Moses said, I don't want to. Thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to pass this time. You ever been there? Yeah, thanks, God, but you know, in reality, your timing is terrible. You know, don't you realize that I'm looking for a new job? Don't you realize that I'm trying to get through school? Don't you realize that my schedule is so hectic and so chaotic that trying to carve out just one more hour for anything is just going to be next to impossible? Thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to pass. Just find someone else. What must that statement sound like to God? The one who knows exactly how many hairs are on your head? What must it sound like for us to tell God, thanks, but no thanks? Weren't you the one who claimed me as your Lord? Weren't you the one who put Christ on in baptism? Weren't you the one who sang, You are my strength when I am weak. You're the treasure that I seek. You're my all in all. What must it sound like to God for us to say, thank you, but I'm going to pass? Remember, God's not going to ask you to do something that he won't equip you and empower you to do. Now, what do we tell our kids when they say, I don't want to? Do it anyway. Just do it. Growing up on the farm, we'd talk about jobs that we'd have to do, and my dad would always stop the conversation with, nothing left to it but to do it. And that meant, this conversation's over. You know, go do something. I think maybe the reason that so many people say no to God is because we've convinced ourselves that we have a better plan. We're not really saying no to God. We're saying, wait, God, I've got a better idea. How arrogant. How incredibly arrogant. And before we wrap up this morning, let me share with you one more thought. And it is what God didn't say to Moses. Now, Moses has all these excuses, all these reasons why he's not going to do anything. It's interesting that God never does say, oh, no, Moses, you're selling yourself short. God never does give him this Tony Robbins kind of self-promotion, kind of a, you know, self-image boost. God never does say, Moses, no, come on, you're talented. You're very courageous. Leadership abilities, come on. Just look how those sheep follow you around. You're a great leader. You think you're not a good speaker? Oh, come on. Remember that toast you made at the Steinberg wedding? They're still talking about that. You're a great speaker. God never says any of that to Moses. Because God knows it's not going to be from human effort, it's not going to be from human wisdom, and it's not going to be from human ability that Pharaoh is going to be convinced to allow 2 million employees leave who just happened to work for him for free. God knows that the only way his children are going to walk out of Egypt is by the power of God. God knows it's only by the great I am that that kind of miracle of biblical proportions will ever be pulled off. It wasn't about Moses. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's all about God. It's about us saying yes to what God is asking us to do. Now, maybe this morning God is in the process of transforming you into a person of doubt to a person of trust. Maybe this morning you're finding yourself at a crossroads. You know, the burning bush certainly was a turning point in Moses' life. You look after that, he didn't come up with any more excuses for God. He buys into the program. He becomes Moses. And because he decided to say yes to God, God blessed him with a front row seat to some of the most amazing miracles and some of the most amazing events that recorded history tells us about. One of the most exciting things you will ever do is say yes to God and then step back and watch how God goes to work. But it's a choice that we have to make. We're going to say yes to God and trust him, or are we going to decide that we've got a better way? There's going to be some shepherds at the front of the auditorium this morning who would love to pray with you about anything that's going on in your life. As a family, if we can pray with you, if we can rejoice with you about something, we'd like to do that. Or if this morning's the day that you decide, I want to put Christ on in baptism, we're ready to help you with that as well. If we can help you in any way, come to the front and let us know how. Stand and sing.